There's a huge opportunity for young people, millennials, to get out there, use their technology, and then start, you know, creating the firms of the future.
Greetings, friends. Welcome back to Future Proof. Bill Sheridan here. Quick note, this week's show is sponsored by the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses by dozens of instructors and unlimited customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. So, we're going to talk a little technology today, specifically artificial intelligence. Now, this is one of those technologies that we've been talking about for years as a possible disruptor for our profession, as a possible job destroyer, as a possible opportunity generator. Well, you can officially take the word possible out of all those phrases. AI is here, and it's delivering as advertised. And my guest this week will testify to that. She is Samantha Bowling. Samantha is a CPA and a CGMA and a partner at Garbelman Winslow. That's a small-ish CPA firm in Upper Marlboro, Maryland. And in the interest of transparency, she's serving as chair of the board of directors of the Maryland Association of CPAs through June of 2019. But for the point of this discussion, she's put an AI-based audit solution to work that's given her firm a huge competitive advantage. And her story, I think, is a perfect illustration of just how fast technology is advancing these days. Let's just take a look at the recent history of artificial intelligence, okay? A little history lesson here. AI, the term artificial intelligence, was coined, surprisingly, way back in 1956. And that's right around the time scientists started researching how to build machines that could learn and get smarter as they did their jobs. And that science advanced steadily for the next 25 years or so. And then really started to take off in the 80s and 90s. Now, here's where it starts to get interesting from an accounting and finance point of view. In the mid-90s, IBM scientists set out to see if they could build an AI that was capable of beating a human being at chess. So they built a machine called Deep Blue for that specific purpose and had Deep Blue play not just any human, but Garry Kasparov, who was the world chess champion at the time. Kasparov won the first match in 1996, but Deep Blue won the rematch in 1997, and that marked the first time a machine had ever beaten a human at chess. And we heard that and said, hey, cool, look what the machine can do, right? And then we just ignored it and went right back to work. Now, fast forward to 2011, Deep Blue had evolved into a machine called Watson, which IBM built specifically to see if they could create a machine that could beat a human at the TV game show Jeopardy. So they had Watson play a couple of guys named Brad Rutter and Ken Jennings in a game of Jeopardy. And these guys weren't slouches either. Brad Rutter is the highest earning Jeopardy contestant of all time at about $4.5 million in winnings. He took over that title from Ken Jennings, who had won just over $4 million in winnings from Jeopardy. So, we're talking about the major leagues of Jeopardy here. And Watson beat them both. Beat them both. And we heard that and we thought, hey, cool, you know, look what the machine can do. And then just went right back to work and ignored it. And then by 2014, Watson was cooking. Watson was creating its own recipes based on what it had learned from millions of cookbooks around the world. And then other industries started applying its learning capabilities. It began to be used in things like healthcare and in the legal profession and retail and weather forecasting and scores of other areas. And still, we didn't really pay much attention. And then on March 8th, 2016, KPMG announced it would start using the Watson technology across its full suite of professional services, including audit and tax and advisory services. And suddenly, that starts to hit pretty close to home for accounting and finance pros, right? But still, I don't think a lot of folks in the profession were really paying attention. I mean, AI at the time, early 2016, was something that only the biggest companies with the deepest pockets could really afford to play around with. And then just 18 months later, right, late 2017, early 2018, somewhere around there, 18 months after KPMG's announcement, Samantha Bowling comes along and starts working with a solution called MindBridge AI Auditor, and thus proving to the world that this AI stuff, it's affordable now to everybody. and can be a huge differentiator for a small firm. And those gaps of time between when new technologies are considered cutting edge and when they go mainstream, they're getting shorter and shorter. You notice that? This stuff is happening faster and faster, which makes it that much more important that we start paying attention to new stuff early on, because chances are everybody will be using it really, really, really soon. So I wanted to sit down with Samantha Bowling and let her tell her story, because I think it offers some important lessons for everybody in our profession from a technology point of view and from a future-focused point of view. So let's take a listen. Here's Samantha Bowling. So Samantha, thanks for being here. First, tell me a little bit about your firm. How big is it? What do you guys do? What do you specialize in? That type of stuff.
Well, thank you for having me today. Actually, we're a small public accounting firm, less than 20 employees. We've been around for 70 years. We really don't have a niche per se. We've had partners develop their practices, you know, over that time frame. And we have partners that specialize in audit, some tax, you know, some business, some individual. So basically, we do everything but government contracting and publicly traded companies.
Okay. So give me a little bit of the origin story behind this move to artificial intelligence. I mean, and I'm talking about like way back before you knew what solution you were going to use. When did you realize that AI was something that you needed to do or at least pay attention to?
It was probably 2.5 years ago. I was at AICPA Council. I was listening to Barry Malazan about KPMG invested millions of dollars into AI and that they were pretty much going to take over the audit practice. They were hiring less auditors, more data analysts, and then using the platform to do pretty much 100% auditing. And as a small firm, usually what happens, that trickle downs to me over like a 15-year period, that the large firms engage in something. If it gets down to my level, it usually takes a very long time to get to me. And then I thought, well, I'm in an area, the DC metro area, where there are a lot of large firm presence. And if I don't start looking at something, then maybe I won't be doing auditing in the future. And I am the audit partner. So then I thought, well, what would be my revenue stream going forward? So I came back after that meeting and I talked to my software company and asked them what they were doing to build AI into their audit platform. And their response was that they weren't doing anything for small firms. They just were starting to look at it for their large firm package. So again, another opportunity that I'm going to miss because I'm not a large firm. I would not have access to that software. Mm-hmm. So being discouraged, as most people are when they're discouraged and they're not sure what to do, they go to their Google machine and start Googling things mm-hmm. about AI. And I was just doing affordable AI or AI for audit practice or, you know, how to get started in AI. And then that's when I found MindBridge, which when I first found them and I watched their demo, I thought this would be amazing if this actually did what it said it did. And then can I really afford this platform? I didn't really know from looking at their demo online. But when I reached out to them, they said they actually just launched their application and I didn't realize how new they were. But they would offer platforms for small, medium, and large firms and make AI available to everyone. And that's really what sold me on them. Even if it wasn't the perfect application to start, I knew they were willing to offer it to everybody. And they were willing to actually let me try it out first and then figure out if it was something that I could use. And then I'd actually help them develop the software to make it better for all levels of accounting firms that are using them. And it's been a really great relationship. As you know, small software companies are willing to listen and make changes, and our large legacy systems, they pretend to listen, but they really don't make any changes.
Right, right. And this was when you finally made the leap and got together with MindBridge, this was when now?
It's probably been about 18 months now that we've been working with the product. So it took from almost 18 months from KPMG saying they're going to use AI in their audit practice to get down to me to actually have access to it, which really, in my career of 25 years of doing this, is remarkable because nothing has ever moved that fast for us.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's awesome. So tell me, how does it work? Describe a little bit about what the solution actually does.
So when I really started looking at the solution, I thought it was just going to help us pick the right sample to look at. So what it does is it takes the entire general ledger. It looks at all the transactions, whether it's a disbursement, revenue, cash disbursement, credit card, any transaction in the general ledger. And it uses control points or benchmarks that are built into the software, which were your normal benchmarks for auditing. Like, was it a zero journal entry? Or was it posted at midnight? All that stuff is already built into the platform. And then it takes the machine learning to say, what have I learned from the transactions that I've looked at as using, I guess, all the formulas they have in there to say, okay, let's say you pay rent of $5,000 a month. It knows that you pay that every month. So if I paid a different amount one month, it would say, this transaction is not normal based on what I've learned using AI. I'm going to put this as a high-risk transaction and somebody should probably look into that. Or let's say I paid a different vendor for rent than I normally do, would say, okay, well, that's not normal based on what I've learned. I'm going to put that as a high-risk transaction. So when you're all done, it has all the transactions into three different buckets. It's either high-risk, medium-risk, or low-risk transaction. And what you can do is actually filter down on the transaction type. So let's say you want to look at revenue. You can say, I'm just going to look at revenue transaction and where's my risk there? And then I could develop my audit plan for revenue based on the risk that was assessed in those transactions. So it's actually enabled us to pick the right sample. In the past, I don't know if you're familiar with auditing, we would just like haphazardly sample or guess what to look at. So we really were really guessing and really not sure whether the sample we looked at was really relevant to the audit we were trying to do and whether it would really find anything. So this actually tells us where to start, not necessarily everything we need to look at, because we still have to use our professional skepticism of what we know about our client and what areas to look in, but it actually gives us the starting point. It makes it a lot easier for us to pick the right transactions.
That's fantastic. And it looks at not just samples, right? We're talking about all transactions.
It's the entire population, yes.
Incredible. So what does having that power allow you and your firm to do differently now? I mean,
so now what we're doing, you know, audits are based on risk assessment, and that's a big thing. That's where you start your audit, is in the risk assessment area and figure out what your audit plan is and what direction to take. So I've now using the software, not just for audit sampling, but for in the very beginning before I start doing anything, to figure out how much risk is in this audit and then design my audit plans and my steps based on the risks in the area that the platforms tell me the risk is. Because before we really kind of sort of knew where the risk was, but not really based on the transaction level. So now we're going to actually be able to develop our audit plan on the transaction level risk and then move forward from there. Now we're still doing the same number of steps because our auditing standards have not caught up with technology to say, you know, you only have to look at high risk transactions. So if I have to look at 60 cash disbursements because the standards say I have to, I still am. I'm just starting with the high risk, the medium, then going to medium risk and then picking the higher of the lower risk transactions to look at. So it hasn't really saved me any time. It's just made it a more relevant audit and a better audit because of it.
And it's in terms of like your competition out there, how big of a differentiator is this? What does it allow you guys to do that your competitors can't?
Well, for me, I've never really tried to grow my audit practice because there's huge risk in audits because you really don't know what you're getting yourself into unless it's a referral from somebody that you already know, or another CPA firm. You might get involved in an audit, but now I feel like I'm not doing any audit unless I can put their general ledger into MyBridge first. And then I could say, okay, well, this new audit has a lot of risk in it, so I'm going to price it accordingly. When in the past, I would not have known that information. I would have just done my standard pricing and then had to do more work and then probably would have lost my profit margin, would have been a lot smaller on that audit because of that. Or maybe I wouldn't have been profitable at all. Or let's say I took an audit that I shouldn't have taken on because there was a lot of high risk. I wouldn't know that in the beginning. So I feel like I am more motivated to grow the audit side in our firm than I ever have in the past.
That's awesome. And of course, and like we've been out there, Tom Hood and I and others, and Barry's been sounding this alarm as well. It's not really an alarm, but
actually it is alarm.
It's the promise of tech, these types of technologies, right? And the promise is that things like AI and blockchain are going to do the number crunching for us, and that's going to free us up to provide more value added types of services for our clients and customers. Now that you've been doing this type of thing with this type of technology, do you find that's true?
I do, actually. And I feel like it's going to be a huge fraud deterrent going forward. I think it's going to change, hopefully, maybe the insurance market, and maybe it'll deter people from conducting fraud because they know that machine learning is looking at the transactions and they're looking at all the transactions and not just some of the transactions.
Mm-hmm.
I can give you a perfect example of that. So I had a nonprofit who, you know, all their officers have credit cards. And when I started using MindBridge, I did not put in the materiality level because I just wanted to see what it'd give me. I didn't want to limit myself to just what my material amount is. So I was looking at transactions and it pulled transactions, like little transactions that were credit card transactions for one of the officers that really were personal transactions, which I probably would have never found. And as you know, a lot of times they could have just been an error in the beginning because you just grab whatever credit card. But had I not brought it to their attention, maybe it eventually one day it would have been a bigger fraud. Mm-hmm. Because if they realize nobody's looking at it, nobody's catching it, they may actually intentionally start using their credit card the wrong way. So this actually pointing those transactions out to me is high risk because there were charges on the credit card that were not normal for that type of industry.
That's really cool. And yeah. That, it kind of brings me to my next question here. You mentioned one of your clients. What has the impact been on your clients as you've been using the solution?
So as a small firm, you know, it's always about the audit price then the bidding and how you do this correctly. But so I went to them in the beginning, my clients, and said, I'm going to start using AI and I'm going to charge you for this. This is a software fee because it's like having a staff person, but this is why I'm charging you for this. And this is what it's going to give you as opposed to once I explained how we picked our sample before and then how we were going to pick it with the software, they're like, well, we want you to do it that way because we want you to be able to make give us a relevant audit and look at the transactions that you should be looking at instead of like guessing at what to look at. So it's been very positive. And now I think next year, this next audit season, which will be this summer, we'll actually be sitting down with our clients and saying, especially new clients, if there's a lot of risk, like explain to them why this is costing so much more and maybe help them, give them recommendations to alleviate the risk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you alluded to this earlier. This is what I think is a pretty powerful concept in this entire conversation, is the fact that in less than 2 years, we've gone from only the largest organizations with the deepest pockets being able to play around with these new technologies, and now almost anybody can do it. So are you starting to see other firms your size starting to make this type of move?
I would say yes. Some small firms our size are making a move, but unfortunately, a lot of firms my size have not grasped technology and they're not where they should be. So I think I think they're probably even more terrified because they haven't made that move. Mm. But what I keep trying to tell them is it's baby steps. You just take one application at a time and you could get there. So I think now you don't have to buy into these huge legacy programs. You can use different vendors. If you don't like the software, you can jump pretty quickly to another software and you're not stuck. I know like a lot of the large firms are stuck. They've invested millions of dollars in these platforms and they can't move on to something else. They have to figure out how to make it work. So, but for small firms, we actually, for once, have an advantage. I think we can move faster.
Mm-hmm. And that's great advice. What other advice would you offer somebody who's just starting to consider? Yeah, I'm thinking like lessons that you learned along the way that, you know, you weren't kind of expecting that might prove helpful to folks who are as they're thinking about stuff like this.
I think everybody's afraid to fail. And I can tell you, I've picked the wrong software many times in the past, but I wouldn't have known that if I didn't try. Right. And I wouldn't have been able to compare software to other software providers if I didn't take the chance. So everybody is so busy trying to get work done and they don't want to invest in technology or move that direction. But if they move in that direction, they will find that technology will make their jobs easier and give them more of the free time that they're trying to get.
Yep. And now you're officially recognized as an innovative CPA, right? CPA.com awarded you one of its 2018 Innovative Practitioner Awards. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
What's your reaction to being recognized in that way?
First, I was very honored to be recognized, considering coming from a small firm. I mean, I don't know how that's even possible, but that just tells you, though, the fact that technology is available and that someone from a small firm of less than 20 people who has access to the technology, and all I did was Google. That's all I did was take, you know, a few hours one night, and because I was desperate and I was worried about losing revenue, that I wanted to find a solution. But I've always done that. Like if I'm ever frustrated in what I in something that I'm working on, and or it doesn't work the way I want, or why is it taking me this long? Or if I say there's got to be a better way, and now there is, and now we have access to the better way, because in the past we didn't really have access.
Mm-hmm. So where do you go next? Well, do you have your eyes on any other technologies that you think might be helpful, or that you might be able to put to use, or are you just kind of figuring out how to master this one?
Oh no, I'm still moving forward. So I haven't, yeah, we haven't mastered MindBridge. We're not really sure whether how to grow the audit practice or whatever, but I feel like we're still too busy mm-hmm. trying to get stuff done. So now that there's that solution with AI, I was very fascinated with BotKeepers at the Innovation Summit mm-hmm. for MACPA. And I am like, we're actually starting to test that out this week on two of our clients. So if I could get more of our stuff being automated, yeah. then we could free up our, you know, our guess, our creative thinking as to where we're going and, you know, where do we move from here?
That's bots are certainly high on the hype cycle right now. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how all that shakes out. And of course, you're more than a leader in your firm. You're a leader in this profession as well. Chair of the MACPA's board of directors. I'm kind of curious what the future of this profession looks like to you.
That's a good question. And I see we've seen a lot of mergers in the last couple of years of small firms. And I think now what's going to happen is you're going to see a lot of small like sole proprietors or just one person like deciding that they want to create a firm and they have access to technology and there's such a huge opportunity for them because so many people are retiring. There's so much work out there. I've never seen this much work in the accounting profession. So there's a huge opportunity for young people, millennials to get out there, use their technology and then start, you know, creating the firms of the future. I think the structure of firms are going to change. You know, right now a lot of firms are based on, like I get paid based on my production. And I think, unfortunately, we've missed the ball on that because if you want to be innovative, you have to motivate people and compensate them on being innovative and doing solutions. So I think the structure of firms will change. The compensation structure will totally change and it needs to happen. So I hope that our firm, which I know will be the leaders in doing that and definitely in Southern Maryland, because I think if you're not compensating people and rewarding them for coming up with these great ideas and being innovative, they're not going to do it.
Yeah. Very cool.
And as far as the government, like in all the other professions, I think, you know, technology is going to impact the government. It's just getting, you know, an act of Congress to let them actually get funds to, because they want to do it and they can't attract young people either because these young people don't want to work with those old legacy systems. They want to be innovative. And if there's not laws in place and our budgets in place for them to have access, then I think the us as customers are going to drive that change. And then the government will change. All industries are going to be changed by technology. But I think government will be the last one, unfortunately, to change.
It's a little hard to turn that Titanic.
It is.
Government. And it's kind of interesting that now you bring up this idea of innovation and new technologies as a recruitment tool. A lot of people don't stop and realize that it is. But it is. It's how are you going to recruit the best and the brightest to come work for you if you're not investing in what's new?
Yeah, I mean, I'm approached all the time about firms or small, like sole proprietors that have like three people that they want to sell their practice to me, and I'm not buying because they don't have anything to offer me because they have not embraced technology. So my advice to these firms that think their succession plan is selling their firm, they better develop the technology and make sure that's in place before they put their firm, you know, out there for sale. Because nobody wants to deal with that. I mean, trust me, I did it once. I'll never do it again.
Well, Samantha, thanks for being here. Thanks for the time and your insights. And keep on keeping on. You're doing great work. So, but great. Thanks for sharing some of that with us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much.
That was Samantha Bowling. She's a CPA and a CGMA and a partner with Garbleman Winslow in Upper Marlboro, Maryland. And she's chair of the MACPA's board of directors and a pretty forward-thinking CPA from a technology point of view, from the sounds of things. If you're interested in checking out MindBridge for yourself, you'll find information at mindbridge.ai. Full disclosure, MindBridge is a strategic partner of the MACPA and the Business Learning Institute. And one more quick shout out to our sponsor this week, which is the Business Learning Institute. Find out how the BLI can help you and your career by visiting blionline.org. That's it, folks. See you next week.